Welcome to the 100th episode of York Hospital Ball. To celebrate the milestone, we welcome Dipo Akinyemi, a fan's favourite who joined the club in 2023 following a successful spell with Ayr United. Dipo's passion and goals quickly endeared him to the York City faithful, and here he talks openly about his time at the LNER Community Stadium, as well as his rollercoaster career to date. As part of this episode, there will be a chance to win a signed shirt from Dipo himself. Details will be at the end of this episode. This episode is proudly sponsored by longtime listener Old Crabtree. Old says it's a pleasure to sponsor the 100th episode of the pod. When it first started in 2019, it was pretty much the most positive aspect of being a City fan, an escape into happier times as we toiled in regional football. Today, the nostalgia is the perfect accompaniment to the goals and great football we regularly see. Here's to another 100. So here it is, episode 100 with Dipo Akinyemi.
So Dipo, thank you so much for joining me on this momentous, for me anyway, 100th episode of York Hospital Ball. And it was fascinating reading about your career, because it has been a bit of a rollercoaster kind of journey for you. And it started off like a real sort of high, wasn't it? The start of your professional career, you played for Stevenage in the Football League. I think you scored against Newport County in just your third game. So just tell us about the feeling around that time when you scored that goal. And did you think kind of this football life was quite easy?
No, actually, like I came in as a youth team player, second year from like December. So like almost like 6 months. And it was tough because I was like, you know, I'd never been in a professional outfit before. It was obviously I had to travel in every day and stuff like that. So it was definitely a real mental battle. And then I didn't actually get given a professional contract at the end of my youth team. They just said, come back in pre-season. There's a new gaffer. You might be able to earn yourself a contract and stuff like that, which I ended up doing. That was a real turning point in my life in terms of I had a hurdle and I was able to overcome it and come back. I didn't even expect to play. I think because I had such a good pre-season, I ended up playing like the first 7 games or something like that, which was amazing for me. And then the manager at the time, Teddy Sheringham, ended up giving me an extension in my contracts and stuff like that after the first 5. But yeah, no, it was definitely, it started off really high. And then I think looking back, I kind of think I got comfortable. Like the first, I thought, oh, right, like, you know, I'm playing. Wow. Like everyone wants to play professionally. So I definitely got humbled. I went on loan for a month to Aldershot. I scored on my debut there. And then I did like a month there, which was good, you know, some good people, good surroundings, really kind of brought me back to earth, come back. But you know the football game, if you don't win matches, there's pressure, you don't end up being picked and stuff like that. So it was definitely a roller coaster. Manager gets sacked. The manager that comes in was my youth team manager. But at the time, there was a little bit of friction and stuff like that. So, you know, I just end up going on a lot of loans after that. It definitely started off high, but it kind of dipped pretty quickly. But I mean, the loans I went on were amazing. I ended up going to Dulwich Hamlet. I think the first year I went to a playoff final. Lost in the final to East Thurrock. Devastated. Then I went on loan again. I was sent on loan before the season even started. I went on loan to St Albans. Another one was good. Some good people to be around. Had a good cup run in the FA Cup. I think we got to like the second or third round. We played Carlisle, who knocked us out. But yeah, got recalled from there. And then I think I went back to Dulwich after that again. Right, another from January to the end of the season. Enjoyed it there as well. Again, the manager there was, his name was Gavin Rose, and his assistant was Junior Caddy, like really good people. Played good football. Atmosphere over there is amazing. I think if you're ever in London and you want to watch a non-league game, that's like proper non-league, proper good atmosphere. That was the first time I actually played in front of a good 3,000-4,000 people. And that wasn't really normal to me, unless it was like Football League. So it was really amazing to kind of play in that sort of atmosphere.
Were those loans, were they character building or were they frustrating or were they both? I mean, because I think I counted you had 7 different clubs, which you're kind of living out of a suitcase, I guess, for some of these.
The first one I got sent to St. Neots, I thought that was a punishment. I think the new manager came in and I was on loan by the end of the week. I didn't really have a decision, didn't get to pick the club. And yeah, like, I really that was the first time where I was like, I didn't really enjoy my football then. And then Dulwich was a breath of fresh air. You know, I think I'd gone there, I scored a few goals, and I, you know, I thought, you know, okay, that season's done, the first season done. Maybe I can go back in the second season and, you know, prove my worth or like try and work my way back in. But I was sitting on loan in my end of year meeting. I was like, yeah, like you're coming back, but you're going on loan next year. And I was sent to train with the youth team. So that's kind of how my career at Stevenage was. The second year was tough because, you know, I was getting, I think I got sent on loan to St Albans, Billericay and Dulwich Hamlet all in one season at the same time training with the youth team. So it was just like that second year was tough mentally. And I was just like, I'm not even getting a sniff here. They even moved me out of the digs I was in to one that outside of Stevenage. So I had the digs in Stevenage. They moved me to a digs the next town. And I didn't drive at the time. So yeah, there was a lot of hardships that time. I think I was lucky at the time that I had a mate called Ryan Johnson. He's at Wimbledon now. We were both kind of similar boats. Apart from he still trained with the first team, but he wasn't really getting in and stuff like that. He'll play here and there. So it was, I suffered, but I didn't suffer alone. We kind of like a lot of bonding and stuff like that.
You're still really young at this point, aren't you? You must have only been 19, 20.
I was 18. Now, Simon, they were 18. I left there at 20. So this was all like really early. I mean, the good thing I enjoyed about it was the fact that even though I got sent on loan loads, I got to play men's football. So I adapted to playing non-league and men's football very early. I mean, I came from a non-league club, Potters Bar, to Stevenage. I was playing men's football there. So I was introduced to men's football pretty directly. A lot of character building. Third year at Stevenage, I went on loan to Bishop Stortford. The assistant manager that was at Stevenage ended up becoming the manager there. Went there and that's the first time someone actually said to me like properly, just express yourself, just go and play. We were losing games, but he just wanted us to pass the ball. It was almost like a 23s, the amount of young players we had in that team. It wasn't really experience, but it was a lot of positives came from it. After, you know, I was doing well, I was scoring goals. That's the first time I actually played as a winger. I played left wing that season with them, and it was just goals and assists. And then yeah, I think when I was doing well and I was around the youth team, and that I was actually pretty professional when I was around them, trying to show them, like, you know, even though you boys, some of you might be training with the first team, that's not just the end of stuff. You haven't made it yet. And then I got invited back to the first team to train and stuff like that. So I think after they broke down a few walls of mine, you know, I got invited back to the training ground with the first team. Bishop Stortford was really good. And then I think I joined Dulwich on a permanent. They were pushing for, you know, promotion to the National League South from the Isthmian at the time. That was good. That was another good one. A lot of hardships over there because at the time we was kicked out of the stadium. So we were playing at someone else's ground at the time. But we ended up getting promoted, which was good. That was amazing.
You scored the winning penalty.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. I think I can safely say I can go back to Dulwich and I can have a lot of people will remember that. I think that was a really pinnacle time in my career. I think that was the first like real positive and something that I had accomplished in football.
And all the pressure is now on Dipo Akinyemi's shoulders. Scores this, Dulwich are in the National League South. Lovelock needs to be a hero for Hendon. Akinyemi to seal promotion for Dulwich. Referee's ready. Akinyemi's ready. Yeah! Dulwich are promoted! Dulwich are in the National League South for the first time in their history! Can you believe it? Akinyemi's the hero! Dulwich are up!
One thing that really struck me about that goal, the penalty shootout, and I managed to find some footage of it and watched it, was the way that some people have that long walk from the halfway line to the penalty spot, and a lot goes through their head as footballers and things like that. You literally sort of almost jog and sprint to the penalty spot, put it down and put it in, and that's it. It's sort of like, is that sort of you, even at that age, just having quite a lot of inner confidence in yourself? Or was it just that you were bricking it and you wanted to get it over with quick?
When you found out it's down to you to win the thing, I didn't feel any pressure. I was just like, I'm going to get this team promoted. I'd taken a few pens for Dulwich as it was anyway. So, you know, the boys knew I was really confident in taking a pen. And yeah, just, I think, I remember I kind of like started a bit and the keeper went for it and I just passed it to the other minute and it was just scenes after that. The pitch is surrounded and it was just, yeah, it was amazing. I think what was good about the game is that we was actually losing. We was losing 1-0. Then Gavin Tomlin scores the equaliser and it goes to extra time. I didn't even start the game, but I came on, tried to win the game and stuff like that. It was tough. And then, yeah, the rest is history with that one. That's really high in my memories, that one.
Just briefly going back to Stevenage, there was a couple of questions I wanted to ask you as well. Was obviously, you mentioned Teddy Sheringham there, former England striker, Tottenham, Man United and everything. He must have had a big influence on you, you know, with his sort of stature as a player and obviously being a fellow striker. So what sort of impact did he have on you?
The one thing that was good with him is that you can ask him anything. You can speak to him about anything. He would join in with some of the, you know, the finishing drills. You know, when I first saw him, I was like, oh my God, that's Teddy Sheringham. What the hell's going on here? And at the time, my uncle's a Spurs fan. So when he found out that Teddy Sheringham was the manager, he was at my game. He's like, wait, your manager's Teddy Sheringham? I was like, yeah. He's like, I've got to meet him. He was really good with me in terms of, I think because I was a young lad, I was raw. I think there's a lot I'd learned from him in terms of the way to move as a striker, the way to hold the ball up, to be competitive, small-sided games, be competitive. He'll join in and he's just as competitive as everyone else, probably even more. He's someone that kind of learned how to actually head the ball properly as well. He actually showed me how to head the ball properly, practice shooting you with left foot, right foot. The time he was there, I think I definitely learned a lot from him.
And the other question was, because York were in the same division back then in the Football yeah. League, and York won one of the few games we did win that season at home. It was against Stevenage. And I mean, I look back, you were sub not used that day. I just wondered if you remembered that game and were you close to coming on at Boven Crescent that afternoon?
You know what? I said to myself, I don't actually remember going to Boven Crescent. I must have been so young because we played York at home. I remember, and I played that game and I got punched in the nose when it was a corner. I'll never forget it. I can't remember who the keeper was at the time, but we played, I think we lost 2-0, if I'm correct. But that's one of the first times that I've ever heard of, you know, York City. But yeah, that I think Boomer Crescent was all a blur, definitely a blur. Well, the dugout's like a little bit below the pitch.
Yeah.
I think I kind of remember it, yeah.
And so during those years after you left Stevenage, obviously you were doing a lot of different jobs, where I think William Hills, McDonald's, Deliveroo. Did you ever sort of lose hope of getting back in the full-time game? Or, you know, and I would imagine COVID would have made that a lot harder as well.
Yeah, it was so hard. Even when I'd gone to Dulwich, I was working Argos, doing deliveries. I went to Chesham on loan for a bit when I was at Dulwich. I was thinking, what am I doing here? Not saying that it was a bad club. It was just like, how have I gone from this to this?
Yeah, you're falling further down the pyramid. Yeah, like,
Falling further down the pecking order and like the leagues than when I should be going up. Like I had a good year the season before and then I was at Chesham. Then I joined Braintree. Yeah, I was there for like maybe like 3 games. And then Welling put a 7-day in for me at the time. Then I moved to Welling and I was at Welling till COVID. When COVID hit, it was just a disaster. You're on furlough, but the wages we were in weren't great as it is. It was tough. It was really tough. Then I had a son in lockdown. So then I think that's when the penny dropped for me a bit. I was like, right, I've got to get myself sorted. I've got to get myself together. Came back in pre-season, overweight. Hadn't been doing anything in off-season, like in COVID, because there wasn't much to do. So going back to Welling, playing the first few games, losing games. And it's tough, I'm overweight. I'm thinking, what is going on? Like, I need to kind of get myself together. Then Peter Taylor comes in. And that's one of the first time I really had a reality check was when he was like, yeah, you are not playing for me until you sort yourself out physically. He's like, I can see a player there, but until you get yourself together, you won't be starting or playing. After that, I was doing all sorts to get fit. I was living in West London at the time. We was training not too far from the ground. I was training, then I would go home. I go to the gym, do cardio. Then I was doing like little fat burners before bed. Then I started cycling from my home to training. And I remember the first day I turned up with my like pedals and one of them was, what are you doing? And I said, I've got to do anything that means necessary. He's like, you're really on it, aren't you? I was like, yeah. It took me about 2 months. I didn't play properly from like beginning of November. And then I started getting back into it properly from like the beginning of January. And then I just... like, that's when I was at my physical peak and stuff like that. I felt really good. And then I started scoring goals. I think I scored I had 3 goals before January. Then I scored 15 from January to the end of the season, just scoring against everyone. End up surviving relegation, which was another one that was like, wow. I think it was from 2019 to 2022. That was just a, those were just tough years. Those were just tough years. But another thing that kind of shaped my character. And yeah, like, I think that's when I ended up going to Scotland after that.
Do you think that it was because it was Peter Taylor and he obviously, he'd been England manager at one point, and he'd given David Beckham the captaincy, I think. And
yeah.
Was it him and his status that made you sort of get yourself fit, or was it that you'd now had a son? What was it that was the slide? It was because it sounds like it was a real sliding doors moment in your career.
Yeah, it was a bit of both. I was like, you can't just be like, do you want to play football or not? Like, that's the question you ask yourself. You're like, you've got a son, you're trying to do part-time football, you're working at the same time. Like, you know, do I work? Do I just play part-time and go uni? Just a lot of questions that I was asking myself. But I definitely said to myself, like, you know, I was like, if I'm going to become a footballer, let me just go full out. Let me go out. And then if I don't, then at least I said, you know, I said I tried. And yeah, that was a real turning point for me. Really good end to the season, that Welling year, scoring from anywhere.
Well, 28 goals in 64 games in a struggling side is obviously going to get you noticed. And yeah, like you say, you joined there, which was quite a left field move. I mean, I checked it on my Google Maps from ground to ground and it was over 8 hours. So
yeah.
How did you sort of decide to go? And also, you mentioned that you had a young son and your partner or your wife or whoever you're with, that must have been quite a difficult conversation as well to say, look, we're going to have to move 8 hours here.
It was. I spoke to a few clubs. I'd obviously, Welling offered me, I think they offered me like a 2 or 3 year deal. And that's like Conference South. That doesn't happen. I had offers from a few National League clubs, but they were like hybrid at the time. They're like 3 days. But I really said to myself, I want to be in full-time football. Didn't really care about the money. I just said, I need to be in around it where I'm training every day. The only thing I can focus on or do is play football. And when I had the opportunity to go to Scotland, at first I was like, oh, that is just, that's really far from home. But also it's like, I'm having to pack the family up. I moved them to somewhere that they're not familiar with. No friends. You know, it's cold. It's a bit easy for me because I can speak to the boys at training. I can have some sort of socialising. But my partner just had little man 24/7. So, yeah, it was tough. It was really tough mentally for him and for me as well, because they ended up going back to London from like February to my end of the season, and I was just up there by myself. It was a worthy sacrifice that I don't regret. It's just in terms of like how my career kind of pushed on from there.
Well, I'm not surprised because you got 24 goals in 45 games. You were top scorer for the whole division. Hat-trick versus Queen's Park, PFA player of the month twice, PFA player of the year. I mean, surely that, you're a confident guy, but surely that must have exceeded what you believed was even possible that season.
Can you hear me? Let's go! Season, Dipo Akinyemi scores again and takes his tally to 21, and he's got the honest men dreaming of Hampden.
I went there with the, I think I signed a 2-year, and I went there, I was like, you know, the first year, get a taste of it, you know, get yourself fit, you know, just, I knew what I was capable of, but it's just having a platform and being able to show people what you can do. And then, like, you know, Scotland's a bit different. They have like cup games. They're almost like preseason games, but they're cup games. And I couldn't score in any of them. Am I going to get a goal here? And you know, because you're from down south and you go up north, then people start questioning, well, who's this guy from down south that been brought up? He can't score from, he's got to score with his life, depending on it. And then you just get a lot of questions. And I always said to like some of the boys, and I say this all the time, once I get one, the floodgates kind of opens and my tail goes up, and then I'm really confident, you know, people kind of see that once I hit that first one, that kind of gets my confidence back. I feel like I'm the best player. That's it. That's just how deluded I am sometimes, you know what I mean? So, and I think as a footballer, you have to be, especially as a striker, you have to believe you are the best. You know, you're the best at what you do. You're the best at scoring goals. So yeah, my first goal was against Queen's Park, actually scored a brace. And then after that, it was just goals after goals after goals after goals after goals after goals. I had 15 by January. By the time it hit, and this is where it gets tough because you're doing so well, scoring so many goals, you're in the newspaper, you're having interviews, you're winning player of the month. At the time, we were top of the league, and aired the season before, almost got relegated. So it's like doing well, and then your Asian rings, you've got Football League clubs sniffing around. You know, a lot of them trying to attract you back to down south. But, you know, I think with Ayr's standpoint is, listen, we're not going to, we're in a good position, top of the league. Like, we just can't let you go right now. That's just not possible. But I understood at the time, like, it was tough because you're like, I can push on and be closer to home. But then you have to understand from a club point of view that we know you want to move back home because, you know, at the end of the day, you're not from Scotland, but, like, you're doing so well for us. And we have an opportunity to get promoted to the SPL. So it was definitely a lot of thinking behind it. Funny enough, I was actually lots of bids coming in January and stuff like that. I think I just had to get, once I got past January and I understood that, listen, I'm not going anywhere, then again, that's when I just start firing goals in again, start winning games. And then we ended up finishing second. And then I just had one of the worst days getting sent off. I don't think I'd ever been sent off in my career. And I got sent off in a playoff semi-final.
You're provoked, though. I've seen the footage. I wasn't going to ask you a question about it, but you brought it up.
Yeah, he definitely made a meal out of it. I think what was frustrating is that I had a back spasm, like my back locked up for the first game. So I missed the first game. I was in this, I was really gutted because I'd done so much work to get to this position and then you can't play. And then we're 3-0 down. And then there was so much, I think I had so much adrenaline for the second game, for the home game. You're throwing your body around, you're just, and then he had me in like almost like a headlock. He committed a foul on me, but I'm trying to get out of this situation where he's like, he's really on my front. I'm like, oh. And I think for a second, I just kind of like lost control and I pushed him in his chest, but he held his face. And when he held his face and with all the ref and stuff like that, I just knew. I was like, oh my God, I was absolutely fuming, really, really angry that day. Like, I was like, how can my season end this bad? And I hope the Ayr fans forgive me.
I'm sure they remember the goals. And I suppose as well up there, when you were saying you had sort of 15 before Christmas, you play them all about four yeah. times anyway, don't you? So it must so be once like, you've scored against one of those teams, you must think, well, I'll be playing them again in a few weeks.
It's really weird for me because I was like, by the time you hit January, you've played each other home and away, and then you got to do it all again. By the time you've played them the third time, you're basically, you know, these centre-halves. Like, I'm speaking to them. I've never met them, but you're having conversations. Oh, like, how's it been? You guys are doing well this season. You're on fire. Yeah, I'm having conversations on the pitch with people that, you know, you've played them so many times. Thinking, like, usually you play someone home, even if, like, you might have some rivalry with someone, like, you smash someone, or someone smashes you or stuff like that. Like, I just feel like, the team that I always had the little grit for was like teams like Morton because they played really aggressive. So I'm like, I've got to be aggressive today. Like Thistle was another one that like somehow they just always beat us somehow. Like even if I had scored, somehow they would score. Or they would one or two like, credit to them, they were actually a good side, a really good side. I actually think that there was quite a few good sides in that league at the time. It was really competitive. Dundee, another one. Another tough side to play against. Queen's Park at the time had a lot of stuff going around it because obviously they owned Hampden. Then they were building a stadium for another called Lesser Hampden and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was really competitive. Even Inverness. Inverness, another team that was like another like good side to play against. Really far, though. Really far and cold. Really cold over there. But yeah, no, it was all in all, it was a really good experience. I really enjoyed it out there.
And naturally, you mentioned there in January, you're getting lots of interest from Football League clubs. They're coming around sniffing again in the summer. You end up at York City, who paid a reported £250,000 for your services. What swung the deal then? Because obviously, I'd imagine there'll have been a lot of Football League clubs, like I said, maybe some maybe closer to home as well when you've got your young son. So what made it swing towards York's favour for you?
The dream is to obviously, like, everyone wants to play in the Football League. But at the same time, because I'd gone through non-league and stuff like that, they just try and take the piss a bit. I think the way it works in England and then with Scotland, people think that because if you're not playing in the SPFL, there wasn't really a respect for the Championship, so the Championship teams. So even with, like, maybe, like, offers they're sending, they're almost disrespectful because they're like, you want a player that scored 24 goals, got 10 assists, PFA Player of the Year, Players Player, like, all these awards. And if you won, like, if you win those sort of awards down south, you get what's rightfully earned, basically. I wasn't old. I was, what, 25, 26, something like that. So I was, you know, great, good age. And I think Ayr just had the standpoint where they're like, if you're going to if we want their services, this is what it costs, and that's just it. And I think I was really close to going to Walsall. At the time I was speaking to Walsall and Gillingham, and at the time it was between those two. Burton as well was another one that was close, but they couldn't. They're just not one of them clubs that pay transfer fees. And that's another thing I learned. A lot of football league clubs don't actually pay transfer fees. They just either get players for free or they pay some, not much really. They'll rather give it to you in wages and stuff like that. Just that's how it works, kind of what I've kind of learned from things. But then my agent rings. He said, New York City, you've paid what they're asking for. Is that somewhere you'd want to go? I was like, York. I've heard of that place before.
Remember getting punched in the nose on a corner?
Yeah, like, I was like, okay. It's like, it's National League, you know, but they've got new exciting owners, you know, selling the club to me and stuff like that. The one thing I've always been a believer in is going places who want you. And at the time, York really wanted me. So if I'm going to go here, I'm coming here to be the main man. I want to play. That's basically it. And everything just happened so quickly. I think I had the conversation with, at the time was Stockdale. I had a conversation with Stockdale. And then I just remember driving up to York. I think almost the next day. Then I'm meeting Matt. Found out Matt is actually from, he actually grew up in North London, where I'm from. So it was almost like a bond or good connection straight off the back. He supports Arsenal. I support Arsenal and stuff like that. So it was, it was really good, really good. I always look back. I don't think I'll ever change my decision of going to York. Never. The fans that I've met, the people, like, everyone's amazing. The fact that I can even go back to York and the reception I get and stuff like that is just amazing. And who knows? Maybe I might come back.
Exclusive. It must have been, it must have been a really good feeling for you to have a team pay that much money for you when you think only a few years before, you know, you're turning up, managers saying you're overweight, you're not going to get in my team, and doing those jobs like you mentioned at Argos and stuff like that, and COVID and the difficulty. It must be a really rewarding feeling to have the flip side of that and feel really wanted. And Matt Ogler's era started with you as a marquee signing.
I think it almost felt like this is well deserved. You have done everything you can to get yourself to this point. And it just, like, the energy just felt amazing. Like, the first place, you know, when I signed was at the stadium. See the pitch. The pitch is lovely. Carpet. I'm looking at the stands. I'm thinking, wow, I could play in this every week. Like, this is amazing. You meet the lads. The lads are real nice, real cool. There was a good core group of players. Even though, you know, we went through a lot of players that year. But when I look back, there was a good core group that just kind of was the embodiment of what York should be like, how York should be, how they treat people and stuff like that. And I think that's, when I think of a club, anytime that I think of a club, when it has that wholesome feeling of family and you can speak to fans and the people in the building are nice and stuff like that, the players are good. Yeah, it just definitely, York is at the top of the list for me.
These are great soundbites for me.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like I said, like I went to watch a couple of weeks ago. I came to watch the Morecambe. Great reception again. Like I still talk to Matt now. Still talk to a lot of the people there. I think that's just one that's really to heart, because at the end of the day, like, they could have bought anyone else. You know, you don't have to pay the money, but they did. And even till now, he always says, you're my first big signing. It always feels good.
Your debut away at Wilson, I remember being at that game and you got off the mark in the first half. You mentioned there when you were at Ayr, it took you four or five games to get the first goal. So that must have been a relief to you when someone had paid that much money and to just get firing.
I think I'd come in maybe like two or three weeks before the season was about to start. And obviously you're waiting for your
International clearance.
That's it. That was a real bugger. So they were saying that I couldn't even play some preseason games because of international clearance. But I found out I actually could have, which is a bit frustrating. But played a bit at Accrington, played a bit in like behind closed doors. I remember the gaffer coming up to me and was like, if you play this amount today in behind closed doors and you play 30 minutes at Accrington, do you think you'll be all right to play for Worcester? I was like, should be. It's like, you know, we'll, you know, give you 60 minutes and then someone gets sent off. You get a man sent off and I'm like, wow, I have to play this whole game. especially the fact that I scored in the first half. And the Wolverhampton fans were giving me stick as well. That's why it felt so good, because I think they were shouting out stuff like, what a waste of money. And then I scored. And then that's when I did the celebration like this, because it was just a bunch of fun. It was just upsetting that we lost the game in the end.
Yeah, well, I felt like that game was a bit like an indicator of what was the season was to go like early on. I mean, there were some good moments, but we almost sort of struggled to do it over 90 minutes. And I just wondered, sort of, a lot of people say about the recruitment in that sort of early matter of Lyric, but I don't remember people complaining at the time. Was it just too many players, too much change, do you think?
There was definitely too many players. I think anyone could see that. I just feel like stuff like I think we was practicing to play. I think we always played the 4-3-3, but that game 3-5-2, and we had a worked on it. We started off all in one change room, and then we were covered over two change rooms. Even like in training, there was almost like you could actually have filled 3 11s and some. So like you can't please everyone, and that's the one thing. I don't know. Obviously, people might have been promised this and that, but you can't have that many players and it's going to be happy, because everyone wants to play and not everyone can play. You can only, 11 can start. And I think at the time, we could only have 5 on the bench, 3 subs. It's not like now where you can bring on 5. I think if we had the 5 subs like we do now, it might have been different, but we actually had, player for player, we had a really good squad. I just don't think it was clicking. Mm. It's just one of them ones where it just wasn't clicking.
It seemed to click for you. I mean, 15 goals over the season, 10 assists. It didn't really matter which manager was in charge. You scored under all of them. And I just wanted to sort of talk through some of your goals in that season. The Bromley one at home I really enjoyed, where you sort of went clean through, sat the keeper down and scored. But I think you've told me before, you act on instinct a lot. And I just think sometimes strikers who go clean through with a lot of time can sort of overthink and sort of second guess themselves. But you almost seem like it feels like you know what you're going to do when you're in
I back myself probably 9 times out of 10. If I'm one-on-one with the keeper, I'm going to score. Whether I go around him, I dink him, or I have to find a way to sit him down. I think at the time when we played them, I scored a few already. So a lot of people are probably doing their research. You know, this guy likes to shoot. At any point, he likes to shoot. When I went through and I just gave the fake and the keeper went down, it just makes it easier for me. That's just something I just kind of think on. I think I've seen a few strikers do that in the Prem. That's just something that I just think of on what to do and stuff like that. On another day, I might just ball roll, go around the keeper. I might do a step and push. But it's just, I think it's all in that moment where I feel right to try and score as well.
Keep them guessing. And we'll come to some more of your goals. But I just wondered what you made of when we sort of hit rock bottom, which was the Altrincham away game. It was 6-1. I just wondered sort of how you are in the dressing room in that sort of moment. You know, that you've had no service that game. So obviously, got to be any blame on yourself for not scoring or anything like that. But obviously, the team sort of capitulated. And what is that dressing room like at that moment in time? Obviously, Adam had only just come in as well. So it must have been so many questions.
I think that's the first time he'd probably seen how bad the morale was at the time, in terms of, because we haven't been winning games, we were drawing a lot, like we'll be in winning positions, then we'll lose. That Altrincham one was a real, like, I went home and I was just, I think everyone probably went home and thought, what the hell is going on here? Like, for the gaffer, and obviously even they're coming in thinking, how are we going to turn this around? So already off the back of that one on the Tuesday night, that one was really telling. I think we had to come in the next day. We actually came in for like a meeting of like 30 minutes. And then I think everyone went home after that. But the fact that it's, you know, usually after a match, you get a day off, kind of recover. But you're in, got home at like 11:30, 12:30. Then you have to be in. And you're just frustrated. Just really frustrated. And then you're just kind of, everyone's asking stuff like, how do we get ourselves out of the situation we're in? Because at the end of the day, no one's going to get us out of it. And yeah, I think I was just saying to myself, Dips, you just need a goal. And then everything will be all right. Or you just need a good performance and we don't lose. And you can build off that. And yeah, I think for a lot of people is the fact that I think because I'd come blonde. I came to the club blonde, and then I went to black over like the winter, and I hadn't scored for a while. And then I went back to blonde, and I played really well against Aldershot. Lenny scored, and I think a lot of the boys were grabbing the change room and said, "Listen, if you go back to black while you're at this club, we're gonna have a problem." So it was almost like, okay, now I have to stay blonde. I feel like, it almost felt like if I'm blonde, I'm playing well and I'm doing well. And yeah, after that Aldershot game, I think I was just scoring goals after that.
Well, it was a Bromley one next, wasn't it? Which was an unexpected win, and you score an absolute screamer. And, you know, I wanted you to kind of, again, talk us through it. I know you'll probably say instinct, but for most people that ends up in Rose Ed. And I'd not realised that you were 10 without a goal at that point.
Yeah.
I'd not realised until I was researching this. I'd not realised that you were on that kind of run, which again, makes you take that on when you're on that sort of run yourself?
10, wow. Was it that long? I think that might be the longest I've been without scoring. I think it's just confidence. The first half, I do quite well to get the assist for Marvin's goal. Just saying to myself, you know, keep the ball, play well, do this, do that. And then the ball just comes over from Rory and it's in the sun. And I think it's going up to Lenny. It goes over Lenny, it bounces. And I just end up running onto it. I clash with the centre half as well. But it's like, I need to get to this ball first. So I get to it and I touch and it's bounced. I felt like the keeper was out more than what it looked like on video. Because on video, I'm like, keeper's not even off to his line that much. But that's just me. I'm like, people think the audacity of even trying that is... Most people, you know, try and maybe take it untouched, run at the defender, try and get a shot. But I think just the way I felt that game, that second half, maybe the way I was playing, I think I had maybe one or two attempts on goal before that. And then, yeah, it just happens.
Your hair was blonde.
Yeah.
But why not?
It was blonde. That's true. My hair was blonde. So...
Is that the best goal of your career?
I think it's definitely up there in terms of the trajectory I kind of went after it, because I've scored a few like really good goals, really important goals. But I think that definitely changed the emotion and atmosphere for York in terms of everyone else kind of doing well after, or the team doing well. It was just like that win really set us to do well later on.
That was one of my next questions was, it felt like the belief of the team had just sort of, you'd got a little bit back from the Aldershot game, but almost like, was this a one-off? And then the Bromley one almost cemented that actually they could do this.
Yeah,
so like, was it like that for you guys in the chair?
Like we're actually a good team. Like Bromley at the time were competing at the top of the table and we have just beat and annihilated them. So that one, I think that block of games was even tough because we had Bromley, Chesterfield, Halifax midweek. Chesterfield, I'm like, another big one. These lot have just won the league pretty much, but it's Chesterfield, they're a really good team. I think we went 1-0 down, didn't we? Woking was the game that basically secured our position in the league to stay, because then we had Solio after. I think we had to lose like 4-0. Also, by the way, I definitely played that game with half a hamstring. I definitely pulled my hamstring just before I scored that Woking goal. I'd done my hammy and I was like, oh my god. But for somehow, I kind of had the strength to put that ball top bins.
We've got Wilco on the back foot, and again it's John Lewis. One touch layoff. Akinyemi's going to shoot. Yes. Tries to place it, and he does so perfectly. The net bulges for the second time. This is York City heading towards safety.
Yeah, when it came out to Akinyemi, no doubt in his mind he was going to hit that first time. What a finish!
But yeah, I didn't train the whole week. I think I did almost like a bit of running on the Friday. But my leg was hurting. Gaffer's like, listen, as long as you're on the pitch, then that's all that matters, because I think they will be scared that even if they see you there, your presence alone will just tough for them to handle. And yeah, like the first 20 minutes, I'm okay. Then we have a free kick and then I just felt it again. I'm like, yeah, this is definitely gone. But I end up playing to like the second half and I can just tell that, like, I think after that, I was like, we're not going to lose the game. So that's when I kind of just went down and come off. But yeah, that run between Bromley to Woking, I think that was just amazing, amazing feeling. Goal and assist against Chesterfield, goal against Halifax, Woking. I think I scored like 4 on the bounce or something like that.
And the Halifax goal, I wanted to mention that as well, because I felt like the sort of the image of you sort of celebrating with the pyro going off behind you and the fans there, it sort of almost epitomised the sort of relationship you had with the York supporters.
Yeah, definitely. I think especially because it was Halifax as well, like, you know, it's a rivalry. When we had scored, it was almost like, wow. Those last 5 games felt like we was top of the league. We were probably top of the league on form, but it felt like I felt untouchable. For me, at that time, I'm like, I could retire here. Like, I could finish my career at this club. That's the feeling I had. I was really happy we survived that year, because I kind of felt like the next year we was going to do something, just the fact of, you know, the way we were, like the way we was passing the ball, even with the personnel, like just the way things were going, it looked like the trajectory was really going up.
And you and Lenny had a good partnership, didn't you? I mean, I mentioned the working game as well, like the way he sort of laid it off into your path. And I know obviously you still got a lot to do to sort of smash into the top corner, but it sort of felt like that's part of someone being in a partnership, knowing that someone's there and, yeah, you know, unselfishly laying it off.
I love Lenny to bits. It was almost like a big brother, little brother vibe, but with a respect level. It was just like, he just kept saying, listen, I will feed you. I will feed you. As long as you play well, you do well, you scoring goals, that's fine with me. Like, I don't mind, like Lenny always said, I don't mind not scoring. As long as we win and you're playing well, then that was it. And yeah, and it's weird because I was playing on the right because we had injuries. We didn't have players. And I think that's what carried me playing out wide to next season, because then Hinch was like, we've got a player, he's a nine, but can play out wide, good devil, I could dribble and stuff like that. So I think that's what went into next season. And funny enough, after that season, agents calling, ringing, da-da-da-da-da, this person wants you, this person wants
you. He seems to be getting this every season at this point.
And it's, yeah, so it's like, after that season, I had Warsaw again, come back, had Port Vale, go to Port Vale for a little, like a bit. But the one thing, I think the one thing that, you know, the reason I stayed is because I was like, something has to wow me to move again. The same with Matt, it was like, you're like our best player. It's the same thing, like, if anyone's going to come, they're going to have to pay a respectable fee for you to go. And he's like, just stay for this year. Like, I think we're going to have a good year. And I was like, you know what? I'll stay. I do love New York. So staying isn't going to, it's not going to affect me, because I'm still going to, you know, I'm still doing well. I still had a good year here. I know what it's like here. You know, I came back fit. I felt I was in good shape. And then I just ended up playing out wide for too long. It was frustrating for me because I just scored 15 goals in a really poor side, a really poor York side. And now I'm playing out of position. I think that was real frustrating. A lot of events that happened that year, or beginning of that year, that kind of changed the course of my time at York. A lot of that, there was a few stuff off the pitch. Yeah, that was kind of like what changed it.
Was it difficult? Because I know sort of publicly you were sort of saying, I'll do whatever I need to do to help the team. But it must be difficult when I suppose you want to play up front, but then you've got someone like Ollie who's playing up front and scoring lots and lots of goals, and Adam kind of only really wanting to play him as up front on his own. Because obviously Josh Stone's had the same problem. Did he? Lenny, I suppose, had the same problem. Yeah. He only really wanted Ollie through the middle on his own.
Yeah, I think obviously the way Hinch wanted to play is just that I think Ollie would drop in and we almost at some points would play with, it looked like we're almost playing with no striker, and then he wants his wingers high and wide running inwards. I could be in nine positions, but then I'm having to track all the way back to left back, which is something that's really unorthodox for me. And it was just like, what was frustrating for me is that I stayed off the back of me and Ollie were going to play together up top. That's what was the message to me. And then I think I had one or two off the field situations. They weren't big. They weren't like, they were easily manageable and stuff like that. And then playing out left was, I can do the job, but I want to be close to the goal enough to score goals. And then obviously there's people like Ash, Ty, people that are natural wingers. I know where I'm good at. That's just where I wanted to play.
Did you ever try to talk to Adam about that? I wondered whether your relationship changed with him sort of over time.
I definitely voiced my opinion, but I think once Ollie started scoring, Ollie's scoring goals. Like,
he didn't stop, did he?
As a professional, you respect it. And I'm going to, Ollie's scoring goals, but I still want to play. So I'm going to play on the left if I have to. I'm not saying that that's my preferred position. I'll do a job. And if that's what's going to be what's best for the team, then I'll do it. And I'll do it. Try and do it to the best of my ability. And that's all I tried to do. I think I assisted quite a few of the boys that beginning of the year as well. Like Lenny was on fire coming to the bench. I was rolling the ball to Mills, putting in the net for a few. It was almost a selfless act. You know, we're really doing well. And if I have to play on the left, then I have to play on the left. And even sometimes I think I had some of my real good performances playing out wide, funny enough. There's a game we played against Ebbsfleet. I played on the right, played really well. That was one of the standout ones. Yeah, it's just like, I just wanted to have the chance, a run of, I think for me, it was just like, try playing both of us together. I don't feel like he tried to. That's what I felt like. And I think the time we did, we played in the FA Cup together up top. we will score. But yeah, I just don't think they tried to kind of mesh me and Ollie together, because I always think, I wonder what it could have been like if me and Ollie was both firing at the same time. That's the question I always ask myself.
A frightening prospect for defenders, I would have thought. And obviously you came to the Markham game and you'll have seen that Ollie and Josh are now playing up front together. So it was probably a little bit for you, like what?
Yeah, it's like what it could have been. I think like it's possible. It's easily possible. Even in the two, I'm watching it, Ollie still drops in like he usually does anyway. Josh is almost like a battering ram, causing, you know, problems running there behind. They're both running behind. You know, some Josh holds the ball. Like, I think it's definitely possible. But obviously, when you're winning games, you don't really want to change the formula, do you? But yeah, like, I think with all of that, I've got to January and I'm almost going to Chesterfield. That gets cut as well. Like, I think that was another turning point, because I was like, listen, I actually sat down with them. I was like, guys, I understand you guys, you know, Ollie's doing well and I get it, but I'm a striker. I want to play as a nine. And that's when I said, listen, like, if I can go and play as a nine in the Football League, then play at work. And I think they understood it at the time. I think there was just obviously some complications with stuff that is out of my control. But then when I come back, it was almost like, you know, we didn't want you to go. We obviously had value as a high player, you know, a real player here. And then I come back, we play Sutton at home. I play as a nine, score, find out I do my ACL in my knee, which was a real, real, real tough period. Because obviously with all that was going on with almost going to Chesterfield, then being there, I think I was there for almost the whole day. I done a medical, everything like that. Like, did the interview, I'm in the shirt and stuff like that. And then I'm back at York on the Monday. And yeah, I think we played the FA Trophy on the Saturday. And obviously everyone's speculating, oh, where's Depor and stuff like that. But I wouldn't change anything with my time at York. I think being in that, coming second and being able to play in the playoff again and stuff like that, like the whole course of it, like I wouldn't change. I think I always say, like, my partner always says, everything happens for a reason. So I don't ever really regret any events that really happened at York, because it always happened for a reason, and that's why I'm probably where I am. But
you're a bit unlucky as well, weren't you, with injuries? I was thinking, like, I remember you coming back and coming on against Rochdale and having that fantastic assist, I think, for Ryan Fallowfield. And then I think you were injured for the next game, and then it was a bit stop-start, wasn't it? And then you mentioned the playoff game there, which I think most supporters were quite surprised that you were starting that game. Like, I think it was a bit left field again.
I was surprised because I'd just come back from injury. I played Rochdale. Then after that, my calf was hurting a little bit, but they were just trying to manage me a bit, so I didn't play while I was on the bench. I think I'd come off the bench twice, and then I think that's when the season finished. And well, the season finished, but we had playoffs. So then when he said, you're starting, I was like, oh, wow, I've only played 2 30-minute games and obviously in training. So I was really shocked. I was definitely shocked. I think some of the boys were pretty shocked as well.
And was that a night that just everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong? What was your thoughts looking back? And the second question I had to that was, did you kind of know walking off that night that it was likely to be your last game for York? Or?
I don't think I thought it was my last game, but I think it kind of depended on conversations I had with the manager and staff when the season finished. You know, I come off at like 60, and then I was just frustrated because I felt like we give away a poor goal, the first one, and that kind of just sets the atmosphere really for the game. I didn't know, we lost the game, is what it is. But when we had the end of year meetings, it was almost like, Ollie's done well. Don't really see you playing nine. You're going to have to play out wide again next year. And I said to him, listen, like, I want to play nine. They're like, well, if you want to go, you can, but we'll be happy to keep you. And I've always been, like I said from the beginning, like, I want to play where I'm wanted, where I'm the main man. And I do well, I'm the main man. And that's just me. And when those two things don't align, then there's going to be crossroads. So I came back to pre-season. I was professional. And you know, when my opportunity to come to Derry was available, I took it.
And that, again, quite an unexpected move. But what was that, sort of the chance to play in Europe, a bit of a pull for you?
A lot of it was, well, I didn't want to go on loan to another National League club because I didn't want to play against York, because I know what I'm like. I'm just one of them guys. People think it's bad, but I'm one of those guys. If I score against York, I'm going to celebrate because I like celebrating my goals. And I didn't want to have to be put in that position. So that's where it was, the decision to kind of go elsewhere. And again, I had Football League clubs But again, it's almost tedious sometimes talking to some of these football league clubs, because it's like everything is just because it's almost the fact of because I haven't played football league since you haven't played, you don't know the league and stuff. But in my head, the National League is probably just as good, or maybe the players in there are probably just as good as the players that play in League Two, League One.
Yeah, I mean, that's been proven, hasn't it, with the FA Cup and how Barnet are doing in League Two.
Exactly. So
are they sort of acting like you should be grateful for an opportunity rather than like the other way around?
Yeah, almost like that. I always show them my track record shows that I know where the net is. So I'm just a person that you can never bully me into making you believe that you're doing this, but we're doing you a favour. You're not doing me a favour. So that's just where my standpoint is.
And Derry, I mean, 3 goals, early doors, but injuries again, are they sort of behind you now? Obviously, they have a different sort of way the season works, don't they?
I think with that one was, I think the reason I probably got injured was because they had been playing throughout the year. I've come back from pre-season and I'm always doing a crash course pre-season to get fit to play. And when you do that, if you don't do your pre-season properly, your body's going to break down. So I think that's just what happened there. But I've had my surgery on my right femur. It's healed. I'm doing rehab now. And the one thing I'm going to do is make sure I go back next season with Derry and make sure I'm fully fit, fully okay. So then they can just get the best version of me. And then hopefully we can, you know, now we've qualified for Europa. Maybe we can get a little international run.
Yeah, that would be good, wouldn't it? And how does it compare to Scotland and the non-league in England? What's the standard like in Ireland?
I think the standard is really competitive. I don't think I've come against a team where I'm like, we should be beating you 3, 4, 5. Maybe the league position might say it, but I think there's some really good players over here in Ireland. And if you just watch some of the games, and even like the players I play with, you've got players, you know, Mickey Duffy won Irish PFA Player of the Year. Absolute clutch. Another player that I'm like, wow, really good. There's a lot of players that have played Football League. There's players that have played Scottish Premier League, stuff like that. So there's a good standard. You're playing Shamrock Rovers who've played in the Champions League. So you're going to come against players who are really good. Yeah, so there's definitely a bit of a jump in level, but I don't think it's too big.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wish you the best of luck. I feel like I was saying, at the start, I was researching your career. It's a very roller coaster sort of ride, but I feel like there's still a lot of this ride still to go for you, isn't there? And like you say, a fit and firing dipper, Ireland better watch out.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think I've stamped myself yet in Ireland. And obviously some of the boys already see that, what they can get for me when I'm somewhat fit and firing. So yeah, I think once I'm fully healthy, fully fit, raring to go, the same kind of fire I had when Peter Taylor came and I had to get fit, that's kind of where I'm at now. So yeah, I'm really excited for next season. Really excited. And yeah, just being in Ireland and I'm still watching how did York do today. I still got the notifications on my phone. I would love to see York get promoted.
Was it strange coming back to the Morecambe game? Was it strange sort of going in and not going in the tunnel and that sort of thing?
It was almost strange because, you know, usually I go and see Lisa, say hello to her, see how she's doing. Then you just go through like the tunnel and you go up. But going the other way, like as a fan, felt really, and you're still getting fans, you know, still getting fans asking for pictures and signatures, which is really nice. And when you're doing your signature, I'm doing my signature, and then you're so used to putting a squad number, but go for one, so I'm just like, okay, just my signature this time. So
maybe your Derry squad number.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, so many York fans, I think, do watch the Derry games when they're on YouTube and stuff like that. And obviously, I have a lot of vested interest in you, and I'm sure that will continue. So, and I'm the same. Wish you the best of luck. And
thank you.
See Dip on the score sheet on a regular basis next year. Yeah,
definitely.
Thank you.
No problem.
So thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed that. Appreciate it's been quite a large gap between the last episode and this one. But pleased to report there are more interviews that I'm kind of planning and that are in the pipeline, so stay tuned for those. Just wanted to say a big thank you to Tom Swanton, who set up this interview. I hope it's not mentioned in the interview, Tom was the person who put Depot on York City's radar initially. And knowing that information, I kind of tapped him up to see if he was still in touch with Depot, and thankfully he was. So a big thank you to him. He's also a massive supporter of the podcast, as are many, many people. And, you know, with it being 100 episodes, I just wanted to kind of reach out and sort of thank a few people who have been kind of supporting me right from the start. So apologies if I miss anyone out, but, and these are in no particular order, but Michael Miles, Daniel Keenan,
Paul Farrar, David Coward, Ben Robinson, Sam Elsgood, and of course, Old Crabtree, who has sponsored this episode. He's been a massive supporter of the podcast and of me right from the beginning. And as ever, I really, really appreciate everyone's support, and it's given me a lot of confidence over the years, and it's given me the inspiration to kind of keep going with them. So really from the bottom of my heart, thank you everyone who's really helped along the way. Massive thank you to anyone who's ever sponsored the series as well. There's been many sponsors over the years, but particularly the Nearly Departed app, who have sponsored quite a lot in recent times. Planning Prospects via my uncle Jason Tate. Also want to thank Dave Flett, who's been a great support as well over the years, and Graham Bradbury, who, without knowing Graham, who knows literally everyone to do with York City, there probably wouldn't even be 20 episodes, let alone 100. So massive thank you to him as well. I've mentioned before, it's a real team effort. So Paul Walton, who does the kind of voiceovers at the start, James Charters and Keith Lee, who've produced and edited many episodes over the years. All fantastic people, all volunteers for York Hospital Radio as well. As ever, we are a charity, York Hospital Radio, and we do need kind of funds to keep going. You might have seen in the recent press reports, we've raised over £6,000 just from Hospital Ball, which is incredible really since it started, and I'd like to keep that going. With that in mind, donations are really, really important, and anyone who donates, even if it's just a pound from this episode, if you know, make sure you put your name on the donations of justgiving.com/YorkHospitalRadio. I'm going to draw a winner at random to give you a signed shirt by Depot. So like I said, some new interviews on the way, but I'm sure you can appreciate after 100 episodes, it gets harder and harder to get people to kind of come on. So if you do know any York City players and you think they've got a good story to tell, then please do put them in touch with me, and I'll endeavour to do more episodes. So thanks again.